Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is Attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.
For Stockton Mortgage Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Dan and Mike.
Good morning, everyone. Beautiful day here in Louisville, Kentucky. It's sunny.
And welcome in, everybody. This is Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel on ESPN Louisville. Michael, are you plugged in yet?
Oh, yeah. I'm plugged in. I didn't know if you were plugged in, so I took off a little bit on the start.
But I didn't hit the button. That's on me. I'm sorry.
That's all right. No sweat process.
Hey, Bobby, I'm glad you're there. What's the deal with the luminaries?
I don't know why they call you that. That's just what they've always called Mike Pratt, and then you're kind of just lumped in with that now.
Okay. Well,
you don't like that?
Well, I don't know. I guess it's okay. Is it okay, Bobby?
I think so. I mean, it seems like a term of endearment.
Well, you know, I've heard Sandy and Streetel use that in the afternoon, but, you know, that doesn't mean anything. But when Diener uses the term, then it gains some credibility, I guess.
Well, this morning, I don't know if you were streaming or not, but this morning they were talking about dining in the refrigerator here at the studio.
Oh, my goodness. I wouldn't even open up that thing.
You know, I went in there the other day, or I guess it was Monday, maybe Friday, I'm not sure, to get a bottle of water. I thought I really needed something cold. So I opened the door, and there was food on top of food. There was pizza as the baseline, and then food stacked on top of food. And the pizza was, the top was open. And it was the nastiest looking stuff, I'm telling you. I mean,
you know what? That's a science experiment in that refrigerator. That whole studio is like a frat house. I mean, you know, it's a bunch of guys that don't really pick up after themselves.
Well, you know, trash sits around. I mean, I don't know. I think our station can afford to have the trash picked up, like, you know, twice a week or something here with all this stuff going on. But the trash is always hanging around, and maybe we have to have, you know, how they put the inmates or the people, the correction group out to pick up the paper, the trash. Yeah. Maybe we need to get something like that going in here.
Well, didn't we have, I thought we had, now this has been several months ago, but I thought one of our listeners came in and cleaned up the refrigerator, but it didn't take long for it to get back to its nasty self.
Well, no non-performing person at this studio would come in and clean up the mess that's back there. You couldn't pay them enough. I mean, they'd have to have rubber gloves. They'd have to have a mask, maybe two masks, okay? And then take a quick shower right after.
You know what, Mike? Let's just call it a hazmat suit. They need a hazmat suit.
Exactly. There you go. You got
that's
it, buddy.
That's a bit much, but you might be right. You might be right. So, but it's a mess, and I think Diener's on the call for that. He's ready to roll and fix that whole thing up.
Good. Well, somebody needs to.
So now our boy Creener, okay?
Yeah.
He comes in, and as Diener and Blanks were leaving, I was coming in. The Creener man comes in. And he tells him, "Look, I brought my lunch not in a Kroger bag, in some other bag." He said, I brought a chocolate chip cookie too. And he said, trust me, I will eat this food. And they were laughing. They said, yeah, we bet you would. He said, I will not leave a half-eaten cookie in the refrigerator. So the Creener's our guy. You know, I mean, he's a neat, tidy guy.
Maybe we could get Crean's mom to come in and clean up the refrigerator.
You think?
Yeah, I think she'd like
he to. He said no.
Oh, okay. All right.
Not enough money in that job. Not enough money.
No, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. I wouldn't wish it. Hey, Michael, did you have an opportunity after the show yesterday to watch that Purdue-Illinois game?
I did. And you get into your memory bank. And who's been promoting Purdue since the start of the season? I think they got.
My partner, Mr. Michael Pratt.
They got their
Is
mojo. Yes, sir. They got their mojo back now. What'd you think of the big boy Edie? He had a really good game, didn't he?
He really did, and you know, he's very mechanical, Mike, but he doesn't make that many mistakes. I mean, he's although you can almost see the wheels turning, he doesn't make many mistakes, and that double-headed monster that they have in the middle with him and Williams, I mean, that's something to deal with. Ivy didn't have a very good game. He did get to the free throw line like 15 times. Didn't shoot very well. And what killed Illinois was that Colburn was in foul trouble the whole game. He wound up fouling out, but I think he only played 22 minutes. But if he's not in there against Williams and Edie, I'll tell you what, though. I do see why Illinois has struggled a little bit. And that is, they have this kid, is it Curbelo? Curbelo, something like
that. Yes, Curbelo, yeah. Yep.
That kid can play, Mike.
Yes, he can.
And he's been out, I think he's been out since like November with some kind of injury and played for the first time. And without him, they would have lost by 15 points in regulation. But Illinois, it's too early to count them out, because if that kid can stay healthy and Colburn can stay out of foul trouble, Illinois is going to be pretty tough to deal with.
I would agree. And the kid, Plummer.
Yeah.
Also played really well with Curbelo. And that was a nice 1-2 punch when Colburn got out. But I think it shows you that Colburn can really get it done against people his size. He has got it done. But, boy, you put the big 7-foot-2 guy on him, okay, and that's it's hard for him to operate. And, of course, Auburn, we're going to see a 7-2 guy on Saturday afternoon in Kessler. And along with the 6'11 guy in Jabari Smith. So that team kind of reminds me of Purdue in that they've got a couple bigs like Purdue, and they've got some good guards in Flanagan, and that KD Johnson's playing well. You know, those teams are very similar. It would be interesting. That'll be quite a matchup if it happens in the NCAA, if both get far enough. Because I would say right now, Auburn's a 1 seed, probably, and Purdue's a 2. So there would be a chance. That would be a heck of a game if they did meet.
Well, you know, you were right. You said, you were right and you were wrong. You said that
now you
would
sound
have
like
Auburn.
My wife.
You said you would have Auburn in the new listings. You said you would have Auburn as the number one team. And they did get 11 more first place votes than Gonzaga. But Gonzaga got more points overall. So Gonzaga is ranked number one and Auburn number two. But I looked at the new bracketology, and of course, you know, it just changes week to week depending on who got beat. But what's interesting is they have, in the latest bracketology on ESPN, they have Auburn as the number one overall seed.
Yeah, I saw that too. That was quite interesting in that the teams that were on the bubble, you know, their projection of first out, last in, all that kind of stuff. It's really, you know, it's all make-believe, okay? But it's really interesting. Kentucky moved up to a 3, okay?
Yep.
Off the win against Tennessee. Now, their net and their ping pong is very good right now, Kentucky. They can ill afford to have a loss at Texas A&M. Although Texas A&M's 3-0 in the league, balanced scoring team, you got to win those games, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll find out over the next couple of weeks. We'll really find out about this Kentucky team, because after A&M, and I think A&M is 3-1, Mike.
I think they're 3. I think they came from behind to beat Mizzou the other night. So I think they're undefeated, Dan. Check that. We'll check that out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I want you to be right, because you're going to be doing the game tomorrow night. So it would behoove you to have the correct information.
By then, I will rely on you to supply that information for me.
What I was getting ready to say is the next couple of weeks, Saturday at Auburn, the following Saturday at Kansas, we'll really find out what the Wildcats look like in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely, and I want to go back to that Illinois-Purdue game, because that was a big time game, double overtime. Yep. The guard Ivy for Purdue.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, he struggled, but he is a pretty daggone good-looking young player.
He made one move, Mike. He got, Illinois turned the ball over, or he made a steal or something, and he took it the length of the court and dribbled between, like, three defenders to get a layup. He is very athletic. Is it the other guard? Is it Stefanovic? He had a big game for him. So I agree with you. I think and the bractology that we just referenced has Purdue as a number two seed.
Yep.
I can't believe that they've got them as a two seed. I think they had Arizona as a one seed. I think when it's all said and done, I think Purdue will be on that top line.
Do you really? Okay. Yeah. There's so much bias toward Gonzaga and Duke, I think, personal opinion. So there's only two spots open. Arizona's playing well, and you're going to give us a scouting report on them when you see them next. I really haven't seen them, but you're going to be awake to see them on the West Coast time.
Yep.
Their time.
Yep.
I'm interested to get a feel. Now, I know Tennessee beat them at Tennessee, okay? And it's tough to compare scores. It's really not fair. But Kentucky beating Tennessee is big, a big look at what maybe Arizona is or isn't. And then, of course, Auburn's got to be there. So Purdue, they get shut out because everyone is unwilling to take the Zags or Duke off that one line. Whether they deserve it or not, but they're unwilling to do it.
Yeah, who in the recent bracketology, Gonzaga, Auburn, and Arizona were ones. Who was the other number one?
Duke. I can't.
Was it Duke?
I think
okay.
so. Yeah.
All
yeah.
right. But anyway, you mentioned the SEC right now, Mike, is really on the line as far as how many teams they'll have in the tournament, because as you referenced, the last four in include Mississippi State and Florida, and the first four out include Texas A&M and Arkansas. So you know, there's four SEC teams there that, according to this the ESPN, there's four SEC teams that could either be in or be out, and that would really I think that would really speak to the strength of the SEC this year.
Well, I'm looking at the standings as we speak. Auburn 5-0, Texas A&M 4-0, Kentucky 4-1, Mississippi State, the team you're talking about, 3-1, and they come to Rupp a week from tomorrow to play a 9 o'clock game, so they have a chance. Everybody says, well, let's look at who Kentucky's playing. They got a chance for a quad one win and yada, yada. But there's teams coming in to play Kentucky, or Kentucky's going to Texas A&M, Mississippi State. They could use a quad one win for their resume. So yeah. They're going to be pumped to play Kentucky for that reason. And then, of course, LSU comes back later on, and I've got some thoughts on that game that I'll share then. But A&M's undefeated at home. They're 10-2 overall. They're 10-0 at home, yes. They're on an eight-game win streak. They've got balanced scoring, very balanced scoring. I think it's from 6.4 to 12.4, and a kid by the name of Jackson – a guard is their leading scorer and a guy that kind of stirs the pot. So a win over Kentucky would certainly be a big step for them to get off any of those first in, first out lines, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, as Cal likes to say, every team that Kentucky plays in the SEC, it's their Super Bowl. And so that would be a huge win for Texas A&M. And you wonder, Mike, if Cal's going to be able to keep this team up. I mean, they're coming off an unbelievable performance against Tennessee, and looking ahead to Auburn Saturday, I hope this one doesn't – what do you like to call them? You like to call them trap games?
Yep.
I hope this one doesn't slip up on them.
Yeah, I agree. I've thought about that. And I'm sure Calipari has too, and he's trying to drum that home to his players. But you know how guys are. Sometimes when you have a game like Tennessee, and you know when you had a big game or two and back-to-back, you think you're 10-foot tall and bulletproof and you can do anything. And with that attitude and respecting your opponent, everything will be fine. But if you get to that 10-foot tall and bulletproof range, which Kentucky's performance Saturday would fall in that, you disrespect your opponent, and that's when you get beat.
Yeah, for sure. Well, they're going to – hopefully Cal will have them ready, because they're going to get Texas A&M's best shot. You know that. You fly out today?
Later on this afternoon we take the buggy, the train to College Station. So
Man, I don't know how you do it. I still haven't recovered from my trip out to Colorado. I don't know how you do that.
Well, I just get on the plane and try to sleep. You know, try to sleep the best I can. And I think on the plane out, I'm going to get a little deeper into Jack Givens's book. You're reading the manuscript, so am I. So I'm enjoying the first couple chapters. Hope to wrap it up, and that'll keep me and go to bed early. I'm gonna be like you. I'm going to bed early, man.
Yeah. You mentioned Goose's book, and we talked about it yesterday about how his mother would not come and when he was in high school at Bryan Station, his mom wouldn't come and watch the games. Never saw him play in high school in person. You know when the first game that Goose's mother saw him play? You might not be that far in the manuscript yet.
I'm not.
She, as Goose mentioned yesterday, she was working at a hospital.
Yep.
Eastern
yep.
Hospital.
Eastern
was that
State Hospital. That's correct.
Yeah, and her fellow employees took up a collection and bought her an airplane ticket to San Diego. And the first time she saw Goose play was in the Final Four his freshman year in San Diego.
Isn't 1975, that cool? Yeah.
Yep.
That was I tell you that what, we all are blessed in many ways, and then there's folks that aren't as blessed, but they find a way to come out of all the issues that they may have for whatever the reason and be successful, and that's Jack Givens. I mean, what, nine siblings in the projects in Lexington, to come out of that and have the life, the career that he's had, boy, I mean, it's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, well, we've said it before. We both grew up in blue collar families. We never wanted for anything, but we never had Right. We were never wealthy by any means, but at least we had our own bed. At least I did. I imagine you had your own bed.
Yep.
He had to share his bed with two other brothers. So, you know, it's hard to imagine where some of these people come from and what a success they can make out of their lives.
And two, we're talking about Jack Givens. He is speaking this afternoon at the Louisville Quarterback Club. Addressing those guys. I hope he tells some of the stories from his book. And Gordon Crawford, our friend Gordon Crawford from Kentucky Colonel Stays, invited both of us. And, you know, I've got a 1 o'clock appointment, and you're in Denver, so we're unable to make it. But I'm glad we got Goose on the phone talking about Joe B. And later on, well, in about 10 minutes, we're going to have Jim Andrews. And Jim is a guy that is kind of unique in that he was recruited by Joe B., okay, then played a year for Adolph, and then 2 years for Joe B., I believe, if I've got my numbers right. So he crossed over between the two. In addition to that, much like Jack Givens, he was recruited by Joe B. He's got a couple great stories about that he'll share with us. So we continue with our tribute to Joe B. Hall, the legendary Kentucky basketball coach. In this, I haven't seen anything about the services for Joe B. Have you?
No, I have not. And I, you know, Sherry and I don't get back till Sunday, so I'm hoping they're not until next week, so that we can attend. But no, I have not seen anything. But you would think that they would give Big Blue Nation an opportunity to show up and in somehow show their respects. At least I hope so.
And I would hope. If it's not today, then I would hope it's Thursday or Friday, because, you know, Cal doesn't want to miss that. I was texting with him, and one of the texts he closed by saying, "I miss him already." And yeah. they had a great relationship, and not all former coaches and current coaches get along like that, but he and Joe got very close. It was a very interesting relationship. I'll tell you a tidbit about Texas A&M. I'm going to leave.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
a little tidbit.
A tidbit, Bobby. In College Station, Kentucky has won 3 of 6. Okay? And the overtime games at College Station, 3 of 6 games played there were overtime. Kentucky's won two of three. Kentucky's won 2 of 3. And I remember.
Where is College? I'm not familiar. Where is College Station in reference to Dallas or Houston or San Antonio?
If you go to Houston, fly into Houston, then you go back east. It's kind of it's about 60, 70 miles from Houston, and maybe 120 or maybe 150 from Baton Rouge. It's kind of in the middle there.
It's between Waco and Houston, so it's like northwest of Houston.
Okay, yeah. Northwest of Houston.
Yeah,
okay.
It's on the Louisiana side.
Yeah, I think if you go east of Houston, I think you're in the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, yeah, okay. You got to go a little north, but I mean, as the bird flies, big fella, the bird flies.
All right.
Okay.
You know, you're just like my wife. You're wrong. You're wrong, but then you change the rules of the game.
So you know, we call that moving the goalpost.
There you go, Bobby. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
I try to do that when I make a bad bet. Move the goalpost. Give me a do-over. Give me a do-over. But back to that Purdue game. I thought that was pretty interesting. If you look at the stats, if you call up the stats, and they're all, it's the shooting and the turnovers are all pretty even, except Purdue got to the foul line 32 times. The Fighting Illini only 15. Yes.
Yeah, and the Illinois coach made his feelings. I mean, there were some horrendous calls in that game, and one of them was against Colburn when he got wrestled to the floor trying to get an offensive rebound, and they called the foul on him. And, you know, don't get me started on the officiating. I don't know what these guys are looking at, but the Illinois certainly didn't get any breaks on the officiating.
No, they didn't. And it's you know, the refereeing in college They're all independent contractors under umbrellas of leagues and all those kind of things. But, you know, they're trying to – I was told they're trying to become attractive to young officials. They have camps in the summer. They do a lot of things to promote and educate and train these officials. But, man, when you get in the game sometimes, these guys have a tendency to swallow their whistle, you know?
Well, you know – The officiating in college basketball isn't any good because of what you just referenced. They're all independent contractors. They have other jobs, and they do this on the side. But having said that, Mike, it's got to be almost impossible. These kids anymore are so big and so athletic and so strong. You know, it's got to be a very difficult game to officiate.
Well, to your point, I sit there and I watch things happen, and I go, how could he make that call? He was right in front of it. I think the officials don't understand that these guys can avoid fouling. They can do a lot of things because they're so athletic. They just anticipate a foul, okay? Now, when a guy reaches and holds, that's one thing. But on block shots, guys twist their bodies. The offensive guy's twisting his body. The defensive guy's twisting his body. And they come up with a block, and they call foul. And they keep pointing to the lower body where he got – and there was nothing but air between the lower bodies. And I just think it's the anticipation of a foul happening that gets a lot of referees. I really
yeah.
do.
Well, and that block charge thing.
Oh my gosh!
Don't get me started on that. I mean, the NBA has it right. I mean, if you're not there, and still for a good couple of seconds, it's always going to be a block. And you know, charges that these officials call, guys taking charges. I mean, they're on, and it's so inconsistent. But if they would just say, you got to be dead still for 2 seconds or it's a block, they'd clean all of that up real, real fast.
Well, we saw Fulkerson for Tennessee, who's the king of flops. He's been there for like 100 years, but he loves to flop. And referees buy into the flop still after all the conversation over the last years about block charge. You're having one right now. We are having one. They still let these guys flop. And, you know, they did put, I believe, am I right, Bobby? They put in a rule that if you're flopping, they give you one warning.
Yep.
And then they give you a technical. And people are still flopping.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, we're never going to – we can talk about that all we want. We're never going to clean that up. Hey, life can come at you fast. Unanticipated debts, student loans, those credit cards you're chipping away at, that home value with home values on the rise in most areas, now may be the time to do a cash-out refinance on your mortgage. You may have more equity in your home than you think. And with historically low interest rates here for now, don't miss out on the opportunity to utilize your home's equity to knock out some of those high interest debts that weigh you down. Get started with our favorite home loan folks at Stockton Mortgage. Just go to Stockton.com. That's Stockton.com. NMLS 8259. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org. Equal housing lender.
This segment of Stockton Mortgage's Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt is presented by KentuckyTourism.com.
Exes live in Texas.
Texas is full of exes.
Yeah, all my exes live in Texas. That's why I reside in Tennessee.
In Tennessee. Well, this segment's brought to you by our friends at KentuckyTourism.com. When you're ready to explore the outdoors, there's no better place than home. Hike, bike, paddle, fish, or even venture deep underground. This is Kentucky. Come see for yourself. Plan your getaway today at KentuckyTourism.com. And Dan, we are joined. I think we've got Big Jim Andrews on the Kim Crawford Wine Celebrity Hotline. We're going to talk a little bit of Joe B. Hall. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing great. How are you all?
We're doing good.
Terrific.
I think you're one of the few guys that spanned Adolph and Joe B. You came in. Joe B. recruited you. I know you got some great stories about that. And then you played on the freshman team, which Joe coached, and then played for Adolph, and then came back and finished your career with Joe. And, I mean, that you've got a bunch. You got a briefcase full of stories on that, don't you?
Well, we do. You know, there was so much going on during that period, too, you know, besides the transition that was going on and Coach Rupp not wanting to retire and the difficulty that that we had to deal with those issues that were going on. You know, there was integration that was happening and or beginning to happen within the SEC. So, yeah, there were a lot of things going on.
Well, Jim, it's kind of unique the way that you were, I guess, discovered is the right word. Tell us about Coach Hall and coming on a recruiting trip.
Yeah, one of Coach's favorite stories, and he always loved to embellish it, but he was on a recruiting trip going to Findlay, Ohio, and had a player that he wanted to see, and he thought, well, by the time that game is over, the gas stations will all be closed, so I need to stop and get some gas. So he happened to stop in Lima, Ohio, where I was playing my senior year of high school basketball, and he stopped in, and, of course, that was back in the days where, you know, you had an attendant pump your gas. You didn't pump your own. So he's standing outside the car and initiated a conversation, and he said, hey, is there any good basketball players around here? And this kid said, yeah. He said, we got a kid move in from Michigan. Said he's averaging 36 points a game and 22 rebounds, or 26, I can't remember. But Coach kind of looked at him. He said, really? He said, yeah. He said, in fact, they're playing tonight right up the road here, about a mile or two. And he gave him the directions, and Coach came over to watch me play and never did make it to Findlay, Ohio. So the days of the internet and those kinds of communication, of course, didn't happen. And you learned a lot about players by word of mouth, and that's exactly how that happened.
Well, Jim, share with us some of your thoughts on playing for Joe. I think that you might have some stories about that also, because as you said, you were playing in a time of change at that point, right, in the athletic department and the basketball program. So what do you remember best about Joe?
You know, what I remember most about him was that he tried as best he could to accommodate Coach Rupp. You know, he invited him to practices, and he did all that he could to try to make sure that Coach was still included. And that even included letting Coach Rupp keep his office. And you both were in Coach Rupp's office, and you know what that was like. It was just like a museum almost of who's who and people that he had met. So Coach Hall had gone down the hall and created his own office. It made it difficult because, you know, Coach Rupp really didn't want to retire. I think he wanted to stay there and call his own shots and those kinds of things. So those were one of the things that stood out. And I know that the friendship that I had with Coach really started then, because my senior year was more of a partnership, a business partnership, if you will, where Coach would call me in on a weekly basis and say, you know, these are the kinds of things, Jim, that I need from you. Sometimes it was points, sometimes it was rebounds, sometimes it was both. Seldom did he ever ask me to do defense, but there were reasons for that. I was not the best defensive player in the world, but he always told me, he said, I want you to get down and at least look like you could play defense, Jim. So we had that those things were going on, and talking with Coach, you know, about the things we would need, and of course, we had those super kittens that had come on with Connor and Grevy and Flynn and Bob Guyette and Locke Mueller I had to give up some scoring that year in order to accommodate those players, so to speak. And there's nothing to say that they weren't great offensive players, because they were. I mean, Kevin Creevy played 10 years in the NBA and was quite a scorer. So those are the kinds of things that I remember about Coach. And one thing that had crossed my mind a number of times, and that was, what would have happened if we did not have a winning season that year? And then the next year, what would have happened to Coach with that 13-13 season? And I had a chance to spend the 93rd birthday with Coach, and we were sat there, and mostly he just didn't really want to talk. He just wanted to hold hands. And the one thing he did say to me, it was a thought that had crossed my mind. He said, "Jim," he said, "you made my career." And that meant so much to me, because it somewhat validated that if we had not had that good year, his first year, and then what would happen second year, he may not have been the head coach at Kentucky.
That's great. That's a great insight. Now, Jim, you came along just about the time freshmen went from being ineligible to being eligible. Was that the year after you graduated that freshmen could play?
I think that was my senior year.
Okay. All right.
Yes, I'm not positive about that, but I remember us recruiting some players that wound up playing for Vandy, a guy named Ford that was down from Western Kentucky, and he wound up going to Vandy, and I think he started that year, so I think that was the first year.
Well, what I was getting to is the fact that you were right in that era, but did not get to play as a freshman. As a result, you only played 80 varsity games at UK. That's a pretty low number.
Yeah, it is. I mean, how many games did you play?
83.
Wasn't many more.
No, I played 83, and Mike missed a couple of games when he cut off the end of his finger, and so he only played 81. But if you look at the career scoring list, I think you might have the fewest games in like the top 25 people.
Yeah, that could be. In fact, when I finished my career, I was 12th on the all-time scoring list, and I think I'm still in the top 30 overall. And you're right, and I've heard you say this before, that, the amount of points that you've averaged and what you had scored, and you like to add the little asterisk at the end, I did it in 3 years, not four.
Well, I've never done that, but other people have done it. I've always felt blessed that I got to do it, I got to play 83 games there. But, Jim, one more on your scoring. Recently, when Oscar scored 30, he had 30 points and 13 rebounds in a recent game, and somebody put out a list of people, former UK players, that had scored at least 30 points and gotten at least 13 rebounds, and I don't know why, but I was surprised that you were number 3 on that list. I mean, you had some great individual performances at Kentucky.
Yeah, I did. In fact, I said, I wonder how many times I did that, because, they were making, and they're not a big deal, and they should make a big deal, because he is a great rebounder and just going to be a super player for Kentucky this year. And so I decided to go back and take a look, and I had done it 7 times. It surprised me that I had had 30 points plus the rebounds that many times. Yeah.
Well, Jim, I've got to get back to the Joe B. Hall thing here, because you two don't understand assist. So we can't talk about assist, and we're talking about your scoring. So you guys were great scorers, just terrific scorers. But, Jim, Joe B. Recruited us. He recruited me. We've shared stories. To share some stories. What made Joe such a good forget about finding out about you at the gas pump, but once he started recruiting you, what I know Ohio State, a lot of schools were after you. What made Joe B stand out among all the other people that were recruiting you?
I'll tell you, Mike, the one thing, I was being recruited by a lot of schools, as you all were too. And, in fact, I had made my mind up, and I don't want the Big Blue Nation to go crazy or too crazy, but I had made up my mind I was going to go to Tennessee. And Ray Mears had coached at Wittenberg, and he knew about me. And when he had gone down to Tennessee, he kept in contact with me, and he came up, and I always thought it was pretty cool. He used to drive that Firebird from Knoxville up to Lima and stop in and see me or take me out to dinner or whatever we would do. And I really liked – I just liked what he had to say. And when I was first Coach Hall came in the gas station story and he decided to recruit me, there was a group of guys from Dayton, Ohio. And, Mike, you knew all of them, Lloyd Lamb and Bob Davidson and Jim Bromigen. And they started coming to my ball games. And they would always go on and talk about Kentucky and how great Kentucky was and all that. And I got the chance to come down then and watch. In fact, I think it was the Tennessee-Kentucky game that was in Lexington that I saw. And I saw the players, Bobby Croft, standing out at the top of the key with his hands on his knees, setting picks. And I saw Kentucky running up and down the floor with that fast break offense. And I thought, that's how I want to play. I don't want to be standing around for 4 years or 3 years with my hands on my knees. And I like the run and gun and scoring and the excitement of that the fast break. So that was the one main thing that caught my eye. And Coach, you know, had a good network of people, like the people out of Dayton. And they would come in and make sure that we were, you know, that I was still on board with going to school. And, in fact, had not met Coach Rupp. The first time I ever talked to Coach Rupp was on the telephone the day I signed my national letter of intent.
Well, you were like –
Yeah, go ahead, Mike. By that time, Coach Rupp wasn't very involved in recruiting. I think the last player that he actually saw play in person, last high school player, was Rick Mount, who would have been our year. But Coach Hall was having such success recruiting that he kind of left it all up to Coach Hall. There's been a number of stories, Jim, about how coaches change from the time they're recruiting you and telling you how great you are until the first time you put on your practice jersey. Was that eye-opening when you got to Kentucky for your first practice?
Well, you know, we had the freshman team there, so you had that transition period as you were going, you know, and learning, and you practiced against, you know, I remember practicing against you, Dan, every day, you know, learning about the system and the things we had to do. And what I remember most was just how much more intensity was for the transition from the high school game to the college game. And that the things you were expected to do and not expected to do, and those were the things that stood out to me as to how much more physical the game was and the kinds of things, you know, the conditioning program. You all were one of the first conditioning programs that Kentucky had. And in fact, I remember my freshman year, there were a few players on your team that decided that the conditioning program was a little bit too much and didn't want to really go through that. And I remember Coach Hall getting us freshmen off together. He said, I don't care what those varsity players are doing. You will show up tomorrow and you will be in the conditioning program. And I remember showing up, and the two varsity players that showed up for that conditioning program that day were Mike Pratt and Dan Issel. And that opened my eyes as to how important you felt that program was. You may not have liked it, but you went and you did it because you knew it was going to improve you as players.
Yeah, I personally, I can't speak for this, but I couldn't stand it.
Well, you prayed for October 15th to get there so you didn't have to do that conditioning program anymore. You finally got to hold a basketball in your hands.
Absolutely. You could not wait. I mean, those 220s, oh, my goodness, yes.
Well, let me ask you this, Jim. Do you keep up with some of your – you came in with, what, four or five guys in your recruiting class?
Yeah, there was Doug Flynn.
Yep.
And, of course, Tom Payne was in that recruiting class, but academically he was not eligible. So he had actually played for Marathon Oil while he worked on his academics, because they didn't have, you know, those summer-type programs where they could get guys eligible. And so that was that. And then we had Steve Pernorwood and Dan Perry were our five players. And, of course, then we had a couple other walk-ons. And the recruiting, the way, you know, it all came about, and, of course, with Tom being the first black to have a scholarship offered to him, you know, that was something that was new to Kentucky. It wasn't new to me, because I played in an area where, you know, there were blacks on the teams, and we played, and that did not, you know, it didn't bother me a bit. But we had a pretty good freshman team, and I remember Doug Flynn being really feisty, a little player, and we had a pretty good year with Coach Hall.
Do you remember what your record was? How many games you played on that freshman team, Jim?
Boy, I don't, Dan. I want to guess that we played, you know, 20 or, well, we played, was two. There were four games that we didn't play in the SEC that were road games, like Mississippi State, and a few of those that we didn't travel with you all. So, but we did play some freshman games back in Lexington. So if I had to guess, we played 22 games, maybe 24.
Yeah, yeah.
And we probably won. We won easily 18, 20 of those.
Well, Jim, we appreciate your time and reminiscing about you and Joe B. That gas station story is just hilarious.
It's a classic.
But it shows it always just shows how intense Joe B was about recruiting and coaching the whole thing. And you know, he was a terrific recruiter, coach, and became friends with most of us afterwards, and became a terrific friend also.
Right. I absolutely agree. You know, and I can remember the pressure that was on Coach my senior year. There were times he would say or do something, and you would kind of think, boy, that was really way off the wall. And I'd go in the next day to talk to him about it, and he just would have a lapse, just wouldn't remember, either chose not to remember it or truly didn't remember it. And I always felt that it was because of the amount of pressure that he had on him to succeed.
Well, thanks again, Jim, for joining us and sharing the stories. And we hope that you stay healthy and get that golf game going again this spring.
Well, I hate to tell you, but I'm working on it right as we speak. I'm down in Florida.
Oh!
And I'm missing all this cold weather that you're having. And I didn't know, has anything been mentioned about a funeral for Coach?
No, I asked if he had seen anything, and I don't think you have you?
No, I still haven't heard any of the details, Jim.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've been trying to stay close to that because I'm ready to make a quick trip up if they decide to do something, but
yep.
It wouldn't surprise me that they would do something for the family, maybe do something later for Coach after all this COVID business goes away.
Yeah. Jim, we really appreciate your time. Enjoy your Florida trip.
I will. Thank you. Thank you all.
All right, Jim.
Bye-bye.
I'll tell you, that gas station story is a classic. But that happens to assistant coaches sometimes. I know you never were an assistant, but I was, and recruited. And I would go out and look for a guy or go see a guy at a particular game and end up liking somebody on the other team that I'd never heard of.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it might sound impossible, but you have to remember, as Jim said, there was no internet. You know, there was no ranking systems. I mean, I can remember that there were high school All-America teams, but, you know, you didn't play each other. You barely played outside of your little area that you grew up in. So, it was possible to find some hidden gems. Now, you know, they know if you can play when you're in the seventh grade, but it wasn't always like that. I'd be interested to know, I doubt that Jim remembered, but I'd be interested to know who Coach Hall was going to see in Findlay, Ohio that night and whatever happened to him.
Well, the only guy I can remember from Findlay was Dave Sorensen. You remember Dave Sorensen, but he was our age, so he would have already been recruited probably, already been at Ohio State when this particular incident happened. And you made a point about how people found out about people and All-American high school teams and yada, yada. There was two. I researched this once about a year or two ago. There were two, Parade All-American, and then they had a magazine called Scholastic Coach Magazine.
Yep, yep.
And those were the two All-American teams back then, is?
Yeah, but you know how they picked them. They just got box scores from newspapers around the country. That's how they came up with it. So they would look at all state teams, and they would I'm sure that there are some really good players that fell through the cracks on that deal.
Yeah, I can remember back then that if you didn't make it to Columbus for the state championship, there were four teams that you probably weren't going to be on anybody's all-state team or an All-American team, because you didn't get that exposure.
Right.
But then we had a North-South Ohio All-Star game, which was a big deal up in Marion, Ohio. Had about 6,000 seats, and it was sold out. It was a big deal. That was the only other time, or the only other time, that you had a chance to expose yourself if you didn't get to Columbus for the state championship. I don't know how it was in Illinois.
Yeah, no, there was no All-Star game or anything like that. Your season came to an end when you got beat in the state tournament. I was fortunate enough that Batavia wasn't too far from downtown Chicago, and so we got some publicity in the Chicago papers, which certainly helped. But it's much easier today with all of the AAU games and all the summer tournaments and stuff. It's a lot easier today to find that talent than it was back then, for sure.
Very few people slip through the cracks right now. Very few.
No. There's just too many games and too many opportunities to show off your talents today. And if you can play a little bit, everybody knows what your name is.
Yep. Yep. So on the second hour, we can talk some NFL football. I think you beat Process and I think, because
Dan
you
went
the Rams.
5-1.
5-1.
For you.
We can talk about that. Yeah.
Well, and I have I also, after watching this wild card weekend, I also have some thoughts on the expansion of the college football playoffs.
Okay. Beautiful.
All right.
Well, let's go back and do that.
Yep. When you're ready to explore the outdoors, there's no better place than the Bluegrass State. Hike forest trails, paddle through clear waters, enjoy a horseback ride, or simply soak up the sights and sounds of nature. Looking for more thrills? Hop on a mountain bike, race through rapids, venture deep underground, or zip through the treetops. This is Kentucky. Come see for yourself. Plan your getaway today at KentuckyTourism.com.
Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases tuition free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.